Hello and welcome to this episode of the Event Manager Podcast by Skift Meetings, the podcast for curious event professionals who want to stay ahead of the game. My name is Miguel Neves and I'm the Editor-in-Chief of Skift Meetings. And this episode titled Africa Rising, I have the pleasure of speaking with Rick Taylor, the CEO of the Business Tourism Company. Our conversation revolves around Rick's work in establishing convention bureaus for several African countries and promoting these destinations for business events. We talk about the challenge of getting governments and investors to appreciate the value of convention bureaus. We talk about why convention bureaus are actually a great investment for destinations because they are key to attracting additional foreign direct investment. We talk about the process of working with institutions like the World Bank in setting up national convention bureaus. And we talk about the importance of forming regional event industry associations to unite local stakeholders. We also talk about Africa 2060, the African Union's development blueprint to achieve inclusive and sustainable socioeconomic development. Hope you enjoy listening to this conversation, and I invite you to check out the other episodes of the Event Manager Podcast by Skift Meetings, all of them on our website, or you can subscribe through your favorite podcast service. Greater Phoenix, rising from the Sonoran Desert, has emerged as a premier meetings destination. We earned the Wall Street Journal designation of having a top 10 convention center, as well as the number one airport in the US. We've won citywide mega events from the Final Four to SemiCon West. We've cultivated flourishing intellectual capital in the high-tech and biomed sectors. And we've even put a brewery in our convention center. Why? Well, the desert made us do it. Plan your next meeting in Greater Phoenix. Go to visitphoenix.com/meetings. Hello and welcome to the Event Manager Podcast by Skift Meetings. I am delighted to be joined today by none other than Rick Taylor, the CEO of the Business Tourism Company. Rick, welcome to the show.
And I'm as delighted as you are to be joining you, Miguel, on this auspicious occasion. Yes, post IMEX 22.
Excellent. We're recording this in early June. We were just saying that we'd like our listeners to imagine that we're sitting at an African campfire. I don't know if you have a specific location in mind, but if you imagine that you're sitting in a campfire, that is where we're going to virtually take you during this podcast episode.
Now, I can see this campfire, Miguel. The sun is setting across the savannah. The trees are sort of silhouetted against the setting sun. And we're sitting there, perhaps with something red in our hands.
That sounds wonderful. Something, a nice beverage
for us.
Rick, we've known each other for, I think, over 10 years. I was kind of doing the sums, and I think we met actually in Serbia in 2011, if I'm not mistaken. I think you were doing some work at that point there, and I was there with IMEX, managing the Future Leader Forum, the event for students, and we've kind of kept in touch ever since.
We have, and it's been a remarkable friendship. It really has been super, and we've indeed that was a great meeting back in Belgrade back in the day, and we've also sweated together on that 5K IMEX run around the river, Miguel.
So yeah, which is a wonderful sweat working opportunity, right?
And we're still sweating, right?
Yes, it does feel like IMEX, when in the years that it does happen, and unfortunately last 2 years it didn't, but this year it happened again. It seems to be our meeting point, or our natural meeting point every year if we don't do other events. But I'd love you to start by just talking through your journey in the industry. I know you have a long history in different parts of the industry, convention bureaus in South Africa, et cetera. Would love to kind of take a quick journey through the story of Rick Taylor and how you came to what you're doing right now.
Terrific. Thank you, Miguel, once again. So let's have a look through the rear view mirror. And my early days were spent in the advertising world, MD of a couple of advertising agencies, and then that was in Johannesburg in South Africa. We then, our sanity prevailed, and we moved to Cape Town, and our certainly our introduction into the meetings world, if you will, was through the acquisition of a small hotel. And obviously, you know, one had to continue with keeping the revenues flowing all year round. And at that time, as in many destinations, the focus was primarily on leisure. And I sort of tripped across the meetings industry, which was a sector we nurtured and worked to keep the winter occupancies rising and paying the bills, if it were. And that slowly started leading into my passion for business events, although we still fondly refer to it, certainly in a lot of emerging countries in which we work, the MICE sector. And one thing, Miguel, led to another, ended up starting, and this was like just post-apartheid, late 1990s, and tourism was clearly an economic incubator. But this hidden gem, MICE, was yet to be discovered. And I think I came across it doing some research, and I went to the city stakeholders, the provincial authorities, and managed to talk them into thinking about a convention center, in brackets read the Cape Town International Convention Center. And of course, the destination marketing organization, the Cape Town Convention Bureau. So Africa's very first convention bureau, that has grown on, you know, if we refer to ICA, it's Africa's number one destination still today. So I think it's important that those who do it first sort of continue with the right management and commitment to continue to be massive contributors to the economy. So that really then led me to South African tourism to help establish that that desk back in 2005. And then that led into the Business Tourism Company, Miguel, which is the institution Colette and I have been both driving with enormous passion across the continent primarily. And we're very proud to say that we've worked alongside terrific teams in Rwanda, Ethiopia. We're in Uganda at the moment, but Uganda came off the back of Kenya. What else have we done? Tanzania. We've also started to explore West, and we've started a project in Senegal. So our French is slowly improving, and Togo. So West is still mushrooming, starting to make its presence felt. But we've focused primarily in East Africa, certainly over the last, 15 years, Miguel, establishing hardworking convention bureaus and as a consequence, helping Africa rise, putting Africa on the economic map off the back of business events. It has been a challenge, entre nous, in so much that many governments, when they think tourism, immediately it's leisure. It seems to be it is a lower hanging fruit. But the business events sector, as you know, is a lot more scientific. It's a lot more strategic. It's a lot more focused. It's more of a craft than, again, with enormous respect, perhaps a more of a shotgun approach that the leisure desks seem to pursue. So here we are in 2022, enormously passionate about Africa particularly and what the MICE sector, the business event sector, can do for the continent at large.
Fascinating. Thank you for taking us through that. I wonder if you remember, you mentioned owning a hotel and being focused on tourism and then kind of really trying to fill up the, I guess, the slower times and the slower periods with this kind of a convention or that kind of thing. Was there a particular moment when you realized the scope or the potential of the business events side of the world?
Absolutely. when, you know, it's, and I, maybe we'll talk about it in a moment, what we call the theory of mice, Miguel. But in that hotel, when, you know, and I think that's the important, you know, you're actually behind the desk. You know what happens from a reservations point of view. You're knowing and appreciating what is happening from a business perspective. You're behind the desk, you're behind the bar, you're serving the clients. And I just looking at our numbers from the hotel, winter, summer was great. You had all the leisure tourists enjoying Cape Town, but the winter months, the rooms were empty. And that's when I discovered we had to go, we had to move into the corporate, we chased down the insurance companies, the incentive companies. And as we got that piston firing, the revenue started to come, the occupancy started to come, and was really thanks to the meetings industry that that the business to be between us that actually survived. You know, that's I know we talk a lot about seasonality and how the business events sector contributes to not only a hotel's seasonality, but indeed to a destination seasonality. So that was really, guys, this is the panacea. If it works for a small hotel, it'll work for a city like Cape Town. It'll work for a country like South Africa. It'll work for a continent like Africa. And you can use many other parallels in terms of destinations as well. So absolutely, Miguel, the light came out, bang, strategically how key the sector is.
And we're talking about a time here where there were no convention bureaus. How did the business operate at that time? How did that all work? Was it up to you individually as a hotel to kind of go and find that business, even the international side of it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So so from that platform, I obviously immersed myself in the tourism ecosystem in South Africa. And I set up the Cape Metropolitan Tourism Organization, which was very leisure-driven in the late 90s, 98, 99. But very quickly, again, during winter, Miguel, you'll find this interesting, seasonality, Cape Town, literally the lights went out on the 1st of April, which was the commencement of winter, and only came back on across the ecosystem, hotels, airlines, the entire value chain, only started coming back on the 1st of October. And that's when I started saying, no, this is not working. Taking my experience from my small experience from the hotel, and how did we then magnify that into the economy? So off the back of the Cape Metropolitan Tourism, obviously, I was engaging with all the politicians on a regular basis. I started talking about this convention bureau. But during that time, I'd been reached out. I spent some time on the board of DMAI, which is now Destination International, meeting with stalwarts like Rick Antonsen and John Hutchison, some good old names from the good old days. And started just connecting and appreciating what business events can do for a destination. And that was really the introduction of the Cape Town Convention, the then Cape Town Convention Bureau. And we set it up as an independent standalone and went to work. Started meeting professionals like your good self on international platforms, and slowly Africa rising off the back of Cape Town. And then since then, gosh, we've been privileged to establish 10 national convention bureaus and other city destinations on the continent. We will see presenting themselves certainly as we head towards 2063. Mm-hmm. And I say 2063 because the African Union has ring-fenced that that magical year as where all things being equal, Africa and tourism is a far, far more potent incubator and piston.
Let's come to that in a second. I'm curious about this. It is, I think, the furthest kind of you know, plan that I've seen of anybody out there, but it's interesting to understand why that year was picked. But I wanted to go back a little bit in terms of setting up Convention Bureau. I mean, this is not many people take on this kind of undertaking. This is a very ambitious project. And I believe at the time you mentioned a few names, I believe the, you know, the standards, the blueprints for convention bureaus are the US market, you know, DI being a more US focused organization. You have convention bureaus in the US being more driven by bed tax and those kind of things and being, you know, a certain type of entities. I think you also have, you know, the Australian models and some people working out there that quite early on set up convention bureaus. I just wanted to maybe talk through what parts of those convention bureaus were you able to kind of learn from and implement, and which parts had to be different, you know, because I, you know, the African reality, you know, you tell me, I don't want to make any big assumptions, but I imagine you had to make adaptations and you had to find ways to work. And you mentioned independent. What does that really mean compared to when we talk about like the US model?
Gosh, Miguel, the African model vis-a-vis either the Australian or the US model, as you'll appreciate, is just so very, very different. Of course, there are some common denominators, categorically. But the first thing is, we've wrestled with, is the comprehension, getting the shareholders, the politicians particularly, the investors, to appreciate the value of a convention bureau. And right now, certainly, I'm going to say across the globe, particularly in emerging markets, there is no better investment any government can make other than in a convention bureau. It brings 1,000 delegates to your destination that weren't coming. So once one comprehends that nugget, and then, you know, the downstream, how do you make that then happen, is where it gets really strategic and very, very exciting. So it's all about, certainly as far as I'm concerned, it's about ROI. Everything gets measured, no matter what it is. And everything actually gets measured. And post show reports, I'm just thinking again, because IMEX is so top of mind, when bureaus go back now, for example, Uganda, there'll be a post-show report, it'll go to the Minister of Tourism, it'll go to the investors, in this particular case of setting up this Uganda Convention Bureau, which is the World Bank, and we will illustrate exactly the millions of dollars that the investment in IMEX this last week, actually how it's going to materialize. So coming back to, you know, the African model, very different to the US, very different to the Australian. You'll know better than most, Miguel, that the US have had convention bureaus for the last 100 years, I mean, at least. I mean, I think Vancouver goes back into the 1903. I mean, I'm just delving into the memory banks here. So it's been around for a long time. Associations have been around for a long time in the US, and indeed a little bit latterly in Australia. It's all pretty brand new, 10 years old, with the exception of South Africa, that have been obviously doing the business events market for a while. Mm-hmm. And here's a case in point, just to prove that a convention bureau is a great investment, Miguel. We, as you know, Colette and I were privileged to work on Rwanda, a campaign, a project that started at the end of 2013, where in terms of ICA rankings, Rwanda was number 21 in Africa. There was nothing there, not even a convention center. Look back now, a few short years later, the country is number 3 in Africa on ICA rankings, from 21, from nowhere to number 3. convention centers, investment strategies, branded hotels across the skyline. Next, end of the month, they are hosting CHOGM, one of the biggest Commonwealth meetings ever. So it can be done with commitment, measurement, direction. Absolutely. Best investment any government can make.
Fascinating. Wanted to reiterate what you said, bringing thousands of attendees or business tourists, if you will. That weren't coming, right? So you're saying these people will come for a convention, they'll come for business tourism of some description, and they weren't going to make it. And there is, of course, that potential that they will then come later for tourism, right? Or extend or do something like that, which is huge for a number of these destinations.
Absolutely. You know, if you go, you can do some research and, you know, talk to people who, you know, you off to Puerto Rico next week. It's probably family or whatever, but there's a very different reason that you are heading to Puerto Rico. If there was a meeting happening in Puerto Rico, thousands of people would be going there. I mean, I remember DMAI, or was it even IACVB back then, had the annual general meeting in Puerto Rico in the early, I'm going to say, perhaps 2002, where the world of meeting profs all ended up in Puerto Rico for 5 days. Again, just to make the case in point, if you look at Frankfurt last week, there were 10,000 delegates, buyers, media in town just because of IMEX. I mean, you know, they certainly weren't there on a vacation of any sorts. So this is the magnetism of the meetings industry.
Absolutely.
Attracts 1,000 people who were not coming to your destination.
Yeah, I think that's a very good, very simple way to explain it. And one of the questions we ask a lot of our podcast guests is, how do we explain what we do to our families? And that may be a good way to explain it, right? Attract people to a destination who weren't planning, who didn't make that.
Exactly. And I think that works, again, to an emerging market. And Africa, you can put it into that emerging market category, for sure. Yeah. But once I get you to Africa as a delegate, then, of course, the next step of the marketing strategy, which then works very, very nicely with leisure, to get of those thousand people, to get up to 40% of them to return to your destination inside 5 years with significant others.
Yeah, that's the definite benefit. You mentioned a little bit of funding, and I think that's also the area where it differs from the US and the Australian models. You mentioned, I think, Uganda. You mentioned World Bank is actually the financial backer of the Convention Bureau. Could you describe, you know, the other, you work with many different convention bureaus. I'm always fascinated to understand the funding models, you know, who's actually putting the money, who's actually believing in these models financially and backing these projects.
So in terms of, let's start with Uganda. So we, as the business tourism company, we work very closely with the World Bank on establishing convention bureaus, because the World Bank has seen, coming back to Rwanda as an example, Miguel, I mean, Rwanda now is generating, and again, I'm going to guess it's in excess of $600 million of revenue out of the meetings industry. That wasn't there in the first place 3 or 4 years ago. So there is, a great case study of how the Convention Bureau works and is managed and reports back. It generates new foreign direct investment, new dollars, imports new dollars into the economy. So back to Uganda, it's the establishment of the Convention Bureau is being funded by the World Bank, and it'll probably be a year investment. The government will then, part of our training and our coaching and our mentoring, the Convention Bureau, the government, the Uganda Tourism Board, where the Convention Bureau sits institutionally, will pick up the strategy, the mandate, and compass and drive the five-year business plan that talks, as we said a little earlier, to a bigger African picture. Because I've always said and maintained still that Convention Bureau is by no means, it's not a short-term investment. Africa is a long-term play. You need to have the vision. What we are doing is building institutions that will be there forever. I mean, the Vancouver Convention Bureau, you look at convention centers across the world, they're not sort of whims at all. They're strategic dreams and vision to deliver all the great stuff that you know better than anybody, Miguel, the knowledge transfer, the education. In fact, that's one, as I think allowed, that's one of the areas we across Africa we really need to develop going forward is a strong or much stronger association foundation. We really have got to get our associations from Cairo to Cape Town, from Dakar to Addis, working and comprehending their specific role of their specific associations. There are loads of headquarters, but they're going to need a lot of encouragement and drive. Yep. So, and that'll be certainly one of the roles of business development that will come out of the convention bureaus that we establish.
But so just to wrap up the funding side of things, so the World Bank is kind of starting this one example, and then the government will kind of pick it up and be the driver force. Is that a model that you've seen across the other destinations you're working with, or does it tend to be more a government initiative to start off with, or is there private investment as well involved?
No. Great question. It's World Bank seed money, government pick it up, continue driving it, accountable, measure the dollars, the investments, private sector, then obviously we'll work alongside the Convention Bureau, because ultimately there's 1,000 delegates coming to the destination will be managed through DMCs, PCOs, convention centers, hotels, taxis, and restaurants. So it's that partnership between government, so the sector being government sector led, but private sector driven. So it's a typical, Miguel, that PPP mentality through advisory boards, through the right kinds of institutions. So the two, crucial that they work hand in hand and work for one another.
Yeah. Would you say that's more in line with, let's say, a European model than the kind of US model that's very kind of private, hotel bed tax, that kind of thing, led?
Yeah, I think the U.S. is again, obviously it's a very sophisticated model and it works really well, but this public private sector, in some cases the public sometimes there's a little bit of angst between the two sort of government, mm-hmm. public and private sector. So, you know, we've been known to have a few arguments around that.
I'm sure there's some heated discussions, all in good spirits, that hopefully get resolved.
But generally, as the PCOs grow, as the DMCs grow, as the value chain grows, that critical mass will start to present itself. And everybody loves a winner. And I think East Africa, particularly across the continent, is the next center of gravity. So our focus is really, if we can get Rwanda, Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia, Tanzania, those East African pivotal brands to start working together and illustrating, you know, certainly to the West, how it can be done. And it'll take time. But I remain absolutely confident that it will become magnetic and it'll happen. And we'll see convention bureaus rise across the continent and deliver the economic impacts that they can deliver.
Are you ready to celebrate your successes in the world of meetings and events? The Skift Meetings Awards are back for 2024, recognizing the most innovative business events companies across 15 categories, and we want you to be a part of it. Winners will feature on Skift Meetings, sending a clear signal to events professionals around the world that these are partners they can rely on. The final deadline for submissions is June 11th. We encourage you to start your submission today to secure the best entry rates. For more information and to start your submission, head to live.skift.com.
So I think where we've positioned the conversation, I think most of the CVB conversation being at IMEX and also IMEX America for many of them, it is, you know, really to attract that US, that European, those kind of associations in those locations. One of the things that we've been looking a lot at Skift is also, you know, African tourism, be leisure and business tourism, and how in a lot of situations that's not a target market, and that's sort of that client and that base is underexploited or not a main focus. Is that something that is also part of your plans and understanding how you navigate that kind of market that's maybe not as established or not as kind of standardized, but has huge potential, right? With Africa having so many young people, so many new companies. I mean, places like Nigeria are simply exploding with innovation and technology and the crypto space and all these kind of things. And they also want to do events and travel. Is there a way to capture that, or is that part of your thinking as well?
Mm. No, absolutely, Miguel. The important, we were just chatting a couple of minutes ago about we have to strengthen the association spine. Mm-hmm. That needs a lot of work. Once that's concretized or better concretized, we can then start reaching out from an association point of view into the European, the international association space. But what we'll be looking for there is, you know, host associations from an international point of view. We need them to kind of move out of their comfort zones and look at taking a meeting to Africa. You know, yes, on the one hand, it's really exciting. It's really different. It'll give delegates something else to experience. Your legacy benefits, I would argue, would be far more enriching if one did that. But with it comes Africa and the unfortunate perception of the continent. Although I think once associations do land on the continent's shores, the eyes and ears are wide open, the experience, the cultural differences are just absolutely amazing. So that's really a bit of a narrative around associations. But back to the US market, what we tend to be doing there is focusing primarily on the incentive space. So here, you know, working closely with Site, for example, you know, to get there are, I mean, some amazing, amazing incentive itineraries that work really well into the North American arena. So we want to really see incentives driven a lot harder into North America, associations driven a lot harder into Europe and the rest of those associations that rotate their business globally. And then the Middle East, Miguel, from an exhibition point of view, loads of exhibitions are going in and happening out of the UAE, the Middle East, what have you. And I think, again, once all the current wars and tribulations subside sooner rather than later, Africa will then become a continent ready for business, open for business. This year is going, it's a big political year across the continent with loads of elections. So perhaps internationally a little bit comme ci, comme ça, but that'll settle down in 12 months' time, 18 months' time, and the continent will be really in the starting blocks.
And hopefully you won't have to start conversations and start processes again, right? Because with political power changing, there's always the chance of that happening. Just wanted to expand on the point you made about associations, the association spine. And just to clarify, do you mean building or nurturing local and regional associations that are connected to international associations? Mm-hmm. And if so, can you just expand a little bit on that strategy to make sure we understand why that's important?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a bedrock of existing associations, loads of them, and we need to give them all purpose and direction. So that's going to be one tactic to link that from a country point of view into a regional point of view, then a continental, and then an international. So that's going to be one part, one pillar, Miguel. Just alongside that, we work very closely with governments to determine exactly what it is that they economically are wanting to drive. So, you know, just to make it easy to understand for in South Africa, for argument's sake, it could be mining. Across the continent, agriculture with food security and all those conversations. So we'll sit down with various stakeholders, determine exactly what it is that the government is driving. How can we hone that particular funnel? And if there's an association, or are there associations that talk to that deliverable, we'll then package the strategy around what government want to see happen. And that also, I think, gives the Convention Bureau terrific credence. It gives it accountability, and the government can then subscribe and see exactly how the Bureau is driving that piston, with the results that come with it, and all the cascading downstream benefits.
Brilliant. No, I think that makes sense. It sounds like a good plan. It sounds quite ambitious, and it sounds like you're working with so many different bodies, right? You have the World Bank, you have the governments, and of course the governments change. You have the associations, you have the private sector. How do you get everybody on the same page? I mean, obviously there's a lot of face-to-face events, there's a lot of meetings, there's a lot of hand-holding, but are there any particular kind of techniques or kind of, you know, specific ways that you get people sort of united around these ambitious efforts?
So one of our tools is we help build an industry association. So for example, in Uganda, to your point, Miguel, with all these different diverse perspectives and points of view, we've developed an association called UWAKI, the Uganda Association of the Conference and Incentives Industry, UACAII, UWAKI. In Rwanda, it was RAPCO. So we started with the BCOs, the Rwanda Association of Professional Conference Organizers. So in each of the countries, in Ethiopia, we did the EEAA, the Ethiopian Events and Exhibitions Association. So we institute a local association, an industry association, plug in all the appropriate stakeholders, spokespeople, and use that as the forum. And normally we would have a monthly meeting, or the association would have a monthly meeting where information is digested and shared, the business plan, the next quarter is addressed and tabled. just so everybody has the opportunity of buying in and feeling a part and parcel of the Convention Bureau and the business events way forward.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because at least in my space and where I'm seeing, I think a lot of people are questioning the value of associations and it's hard to kind of keep associations top of mind. But what you're saying is that actually associations are really key, particularly in these developing markets, to bringing people together. And it really is one of the key ways to unite these destinations in this focus.
Yeah. And I think it's a barometer, Miguel. It helps to raise standards, keep standards, and it's also a platform where international best practices can be shared. And you know, professional development is critical, and it's on those kinds of platforms one can talk about education, shows. As the private sector starts to look at their business plans for forthcoming financial years, I think it's important that they appreciate that the Bureau is going to go, for example, to IMEX America in October, not only in 22, but also in 23 and 24. So plan as a private sector to invest on those platforms if it's strategically appropriate, right?
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So wanted to get back to Africa 2063. Talk to me a little bit about that. It's a 50-year plan, right? What is it for people who don't know anything about it? I must admit, my knowledge is somewhat limited, but I know it's the Africa Union that kind of put this together. And what does it mean for the event industry?
Yeah. Miguel, Agenda 2063, let's do the maths quickly. It's only 40 odd years away, so it's not that far away, right?
It feels like a really long-term thinking. You know, when we're talking about, net zero by 2050 and those kind of things, that already seems very distant, but 2063 seems even further.
It does, and I think these dates feel... Arguably, they are very, very distant. But tourism and business events, it needs airline strategies, convention center strategies, convention bureau strategies, infrastructure. It needs this long-term horizon. So it's just a group of passionate people out of the AU who've looked at this amazing continent. It's, 30 billion square kilometers in size. It's got 1.3 or 4 billion population and growing, you know, and you've seen all those lovely those pictures of this Africa, this iconic continent that, I mean, the North America fits into the Sahara. I mean, just to try and give one some sense of size and dimension. And what it can achieve with all things being equal. So if we double click on all things being equal, what is that? It's infrastructure. So by 2063, the air strategy, hopefully better be a lot more coordinated. I mean, right now, to get to some sort of countries, Miguel, you've got to fly via Europe, you know, and it's just all over the place. So it needs a lot of management, infrastructure management, roads, railways. Already across East Africa, the rail network is starting to take some kind of shape. So it's really taking this continent and giving it, credentials, credibility, governance, buy-in. I was lying awake the other day just thinking, you know, poverty. We have to get rid of this human shadow called poverty. How are we going to do it responsibly? And I think the business events sector can do it. We need investment. I mean, how do we arrest the immigration, the migration challenges? You know, you've got these billionaires like the Gates Foundation, why don't they come into Africa and develop economies? You know, you got the youth. I think the average age of the population in Africa is 19.7 years of age. In Europe, and again, it's like 37. In Japan, it's 47. You know, so it's got all this youth, all this amazing potential. But it, again, perhaps through my lens and perhaps others as well, Miguel, it's not being, we need to build the confidence and make sure that, you know, Africa has its fair share, gets its fair share of the future. And it needs optimism. It's got so much going for it, but it's, you know, I often say, what is a sundial in the shade? Here is a sundial. It's in the shadows. And somehow through the meetings, events, industry, how can we pull the sundial and give it its rightful place mid-sun and grow optimism and good things? So I think the African agenda is the Africa we want. That's the vision. The Africa we want. We want health. Now, again, I mean, I put South Africa perhaps on its own to a larger or lesser degree, Miguel, because I think, you know, politics aside, South Africa is doing a great job. But I'm sure that, you know, that can wash into the other 53 amazing destinations on this glorious continent.
It does sound like business events is a good industry to invest to make this a reality, right? It's a sustainable, you know, provided there is a sustainable plan around it, right? Not just attracting foreign tourists, but attracting them in a sustainable way where there's profits to the local locals everywhere, you know, where the environment is not seriously damaged as a consequence. It sounds like a very compatible industry to feed that through.
I'm with you. I mean, it talks to all the SDGs. Of course, the question is, how do we ignite it? How do we get this happening?
Excellent. Well, I hope that you keep us in the loop on how your plans change and how your plans adapt and how your plans develop around this. I think that would be fascinating.
Thank you,
Rick. Been a pleasure talking with you. I think it's still so much to learn about Africa and so much to do. I wish you lots of success with all the destinations that you're working with. It sounds like you are very busy. And I know you had, how many destinations were you working with at IMEX, just to make sure we keep that on record?
Okay, so there was, I don't know offhand, Tanzania was there, Kenya, Uganda, Rwanda, Ethiopia, so that's five parts of South Africa, but six.
Excellent. And it was definitely the biggest showing at IMEX. Africa had its largest showing at IMEX, which is great to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, want to wrap up there, but I want to ask you for a recommendation for a next person that should be on the podcast, a next guest, and maybe somebody that you recommend that we could talk more about the development of Africa. It can be absolutely anybody, but would love to get a recommendation from you. And also what we should talk about, what we should ask them about, would be a great thing to ask you as well.
Yeah, I do. If you wanted somebody on the PCO side of it out of Ethiopia, there is Flawless Events, which is also Yawadin Tiduan, is amazing, energetic, full of life. She could perhaps put a private.
She sounds like a very adequate guest. I think the minister may be a little bit different for this type of podcast recording, but she sounds like a great guest. And I think I really like the idea of starting with Ethiopia and walking through the East Africa destinations and really getting a grasp of what what it means to them and how they're developing and their plans for the future.
Yeah. So I think that would be, you know, the land of origins. There's so much culture there. And it's a very, very
exciting.
That sounds
great. And what would you ask them if you were interviewing them on the podcast? Just one question. What is the one question I should not miss asking them or her?
What are your dreams? What is your vision? Where do you see the Ethiopian Convention Bureau in 2030?
Okay, we're coming a little bit closer, 2030, not quite 2063, but I think that's good.
No,
that's,
I know that they should have all that information at their at their arm's length.
Excellent. It'd be good to get their vision of the future of the Convention Bureau. Rick, absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you for sharing all this. Makes me definitely want to go to Africa and explore all parts of Africa that I have not had a chance of going to. And I think our listeners will feel the same way. So thank you for being on the podcast with us today.
It's been an absolute pleasure, my friend. Absolutely anytime, and always here for you.
Thank you very much. Take care.
You too. Bye.